Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Coming up bottom of the hour, we are going to talk about a kid whose name you should probably know by now, and that's Connor Bedard of the Regina Pats of the Western Hockey League. He's 15 years old. He's the first exceptional player allowed into the Western Hockey League, and he is tearing it up. And dare I say, he is right now one of, and do we even say the best player right now in the Western Hockey League? Sam Cosentino on him towards the bottom of the hour. And Sam's prospect list is out. And it kind of reads like just the roster of the Michigan Wolverines. I think he's got like four in the top five, if you consider Luke Hughes, who's committed to Michigan as well. So we'll get into that with Sam Cosentino at the bottom of the hour. Meanwhile, Stewie, Justin, good afternoon. I'm not sure how we would characterize that game. First period was Maple Leafs. Second period was all Habs. Third period was Maple Leafs, perhaps, is the best way. Maple Leafs went 3-2. Corey Perry made it interesting for the Montreal Canadiens. But at the end of it, Justin, Jack Campbell, with his 10th win in a row, 32-save performance. And should we say an interview for the ages with Sean McKenzie last night?
Yeah, that was really nice. It's, I think people miss sometimes the pressure that individuals go through. And I think that comes with early season success, a high draft spot, a lot of pressure. To be honest, Stewie's probably got to weigh in on that. It's great that Campbell has been able to have the success he's had. But Stewie, yeah, I mean, you could probably relate to the pressures that come with the draft slot and all that Campbell felt, eh?
Yeah, I was a first rounder, 25th overall, no big deal in the deepest draft of all time. But it does come with a set.
You were
a
1979
right?
draft. And I thought you were 2000. You were 2003. I thought.
Yeah, and again, I. Yeah, me and Dale Hunter. but it does come with some pressures, and again, it's not a lot of guys pan out. And I don't say I had a first rounder's career. I was up and down in the minors, but I think I had a fairly decent career. But when you're a first rounder coming into an organization, you're sort of expected to come in and be a guy right away too. So especially as a goaltender, that's one thing is where there's a lot of pressure on goalies, especially ones that are drafted in the first round, to sort of come in and take over the organization. But it's tough. It's tough, and they say most goalies don't really pan out till 30 years old, and it's good to see that Jack Campbell's starting to round around the corner. But I think the one thing that everyone can agree on right now with Jack Campbell is that he's the undisputed number one, and you have to ride a hot goalie until the cows come home. So he has to stay healthy, but right now I don't think there's any debate that Jack Campbell is the guy right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Elliot, the last night on television, was talking about how the Maple Leafs don't expect Frederik Andersen back until after the trade deadline, but they do expect him back at some point this season. But one of the interesting things, and I bring up the interview with Sean McKenzie yesterday as a conversation point. We'll get more into the game here, and we'll talk about the Nylander situation and Matthews' performance, etc. But I think one of the things that's so jarring about Jack Campbell is we're not used to people like him. Like, we're not used to people that are outwardly genuinely nice and don't mind sharing it publicly. And that interview was an example, I think, for everybody, just to sort of have a peek inside what makes this guy tick and who he's all about. His teammates know all about this, obviously. Maple Leafs, Kings, Dallas Stars, that organization. But do you find something, and maybe it's more of a commentary on society, that someone who's that nice really seems to stand out, when really we should all be like that, and everybody should have that as a standard for proper behavior? Like, there's something really jarring in a good way, Justin, about Jack Campbell, no?
There is. I also think that, I think that it's impossible, well, not impossible, but it's really unlikely to find that sort of personality in a player, because you're in the combat so much more as a player. Like, as a goaltender, you're not really asked to fight. You're not really, intimidation is not a part of the game. You're just kind of, your job is to stop pucks, and that's your role. I feel if a player was that nice, we would look at him as soft. I think other players might take him as soft, want to take advantage of him. And I think there's some posturing that no one wants to represent themselves as that nice. I feel like you can only be that nice as a goalie.
Stewie, agree, disagree?
Yeah, I agree. And there's certain goalies that you know that the players play in front of you, but there's other goalies like Jack Campbell that the players play for you. And it just shows by after every game that he wins how excited each player is, because that just shows how great of a guy he is. And you know, when I played, and goalies are a different breed. And when I played, there's some goalies you hit them in the head in practice, you generally feel bad and just come and say sorry. And there's other goalies where you just laugh at them and say, well, that's what you get for being a goalie, and that's why you wear a helmet and you skate away laughing. So with the dynamics of a team, especially when you got a guy like Jack Campbell, you want to go above and beyond because you want to play for your buddy. So I think that could be a message to the young players coming up and being a good teammate, the importance of being a good guy, being a good teammate. It goes a long, long way. And here's a guy that could have easily been out of the league or went down to the minors or ended up in Europe. But just because he's a great guy, he's getting other opportunities, and now he's running away with it.
It's actually really funny that all goalies aren't super nice now that you mention it, because you do have the option with every shot in practice to be nice to the guy or buzz one by his ears.
It's a great point. What about the performance? I mean, that's 32 saves yesterday. He sets a new Toronto Maple Leafs franchise record, 10 wins in a row. You know, sorry John Ross Roach, sorry Jacques Plante, and sorry Felix Potvin. But there's a new record holder as it comes to Maple Leafs netminders. What about the performance last night, Justin, by Jack Campbell?
He was there when he needed to be, for sure. The
second period.
Right? That was when Montreal came on. I think they outchanced the Leafs 14-4 in that period. It's interesting. I've heard Sheldon Keefe a couple of times now talk about the benchmark for their goaltenders. Basically, like, if you give up less than three, we like your performance. If you give up three, we don't like it. You know, it seems to be pretty cut and dried. Keep us under the number three, and we should win the hockey game. He kept them under the number three, made a lot of good saves for them. And that's the biggest thing is they've asked of him, is just no soft ones. Just stop the ones you're supposed to stop, and he's certainly taken care of that.
Stu, you have a thought on the performance last night?
I think he went above and beyond that call of duty, because there's some goals, some shots that are supposed to go in, and on other goalies you wouldn't really blame him on the goaltender, but he's actually made those saves. So I think that's the difference now, that he's making saves that sometimes he has no business making, saying, hey, you know what, no big deal, that went in, we'll get him next time. So he's actually stepping up and proving that he can be a number one guy too. I like that as well.
So before the game yesterday, Toronto Maple Leafs PR puts out that William Nylander would not play due to a COVID complication. Not that he tested positive or anything, but had contact with someone's... I've got to be very careful how I phrase this. He had close contact with someone who may have been exposed to the virus, I think is the safest way to put it. So we don't know what's happening right now with William Nylander. This might just be like you're sitting for a game and that's it. We don't know what is going to happen. But reading into what we saw last night in the game, one, John Tavares looked much different without William Nylander with him. The Maple Leafs seemed to spend less time in the offensive zone and had a harder time entering the offensive zone without William Neal. Like, how many times, Justin, have we said, you're not going to really appreciate what you have in William Nylander until he's not there? So last night, the Maple Leafs did not have William Nylander. First thing I noticed, different John Tavares, less offensive zone time, obviously one less weapon in the offensive lineup, and zone entries weren't as easy for the Maple Leafs without Nylander. What did you see?
Well, I saw how thin it got lower in the lineup, too. Like, the line of, was it Engvall, Barabanov, and Simmons? That was not my favorite line I've seen the Toronto Maple Leafs roll out there this season. I think that, you know, that's just with one injury up front. You know, heaven forbid there's two or three. You know, Stewie and I were on the morning show this morning, so we already kind of touched on that part of it. But yeah, you lose one guy and things get thin real quick. So that just speaks to how important this deadline is, because you have to be prepared for the worst case scenarios.
I think the one part as well is the emergence of Galchenyuk, and he was driving the line, and he had a couple beautiful entries where he was faking wide and he cut to the middle to his backhand and was comfortable. Usually, you know, for me, I have to chip that puck in, or I'm turning that over and ending up in the press box for 2 weeks after that. But he has the confidence to come into a situation where he's plucked off waivers, goes down to the minors, to have that confidence to hold on to the puck and make plays. He's getting better and better every single game, and Kyle Dubas mentioned that it's making them reconsider if they really need to go out out and get a top line guy. I still think they need a couple more depth guys, but Galchenyuk's proving that he can make plays and play an offensive role for this Maple Leaf team.
You guys can answer this way better than I can speculate on it, but I can't believe, I don't know, I can't believe this is the same skater that we saw at the beginning of the season with the Ottawa Senators, or this is the same skater that we've seen previous with the Pittsburgh Penguins, Arizona Coyotes, Minnesota Wild. Like, pick a team. How quickly can you change your skating? Because it seems as if the guy that we saw skating at the beginning of the season, which wasn't that long ago, guys, at the beginning of the season with the Ottawa Senators, is not that same guy that we see now. Like, the skating looks profoundly different.
Yeah, I don't think you can change it that quick. I don't know. It's tough to really know. I'd love to hear from him about what feels different. For what I notice most of all is his comfort with hanging onto the puck and not just giving it to someone or panicking because he's a guy who's, you know, maybe on his last legs in the NHL. He's not just chipping it deep and afraid of what coach is going to say. He's hanging on to it. He's hanging on to it in traffic, and he's looking for a play and making plays, and that it goes a long way for a guy, his poise and his vision and able to use the tools he has, I think, because of his confidence. Whether that's because of his skating and he's feeling more comfortable there, or just his slot in the organization and the guys around him, whatever it is, I feel like I can see confidence oozing out of his hands and into his stick right now.
It all comes down to confidence. And I went from 7 points 1 year in Florida to the minors and to 40 points in Atlanta. And the only thing that changed, not my fitness, not my attitude, I still had great in both categories, was just the confidence that the coach gave me. And Craig Ramsey pulled me aside and said, Stewie, you're on this team. You're going to be on this team for the rest of the season. You don't feel like you're being scrutinized every single shift. Go out and just play. Stick to the realms of the system and, you know, don't turn the pucks over at the blue line, but just go play. Whoever you picture yourself, if you're watching yourself on TV, the type of player you want to be that player. And I went from, you know, sitting out 35 games in the National Hockey League to playing on a line with Evander Kane and Nick Antropov, second line for the Atlanta Thrashers. So confidence goes a long way. So I'm sure they pulled him aside, had a conversation saying, hey, we're not grading you on a game-to-game basis. We're going to give you a month. Go out, play, show what you can do. And the confidence is working well for Galchenyuk right now.
Have you guys seen enough from Alex Galchenyuk? Like, let's say the like, right now, the New Jersey Devils are open for business. Okay, so yesterday, they trade Cal Palmieri and Travis Zajac to the Islanders. We're going to get to that trade here in a couple of minutes. So New Jersey's open for business. So if the Maple Leafs were thinking about a player like Miles Wood, for example, have you seen enough from Alex Galchenyuk to say, you know what, the Leafs don't need to make that deal? They don't need
not
that right
for
now.
Me. Not for me. I just... He's been awesome. My commentary here has nothing to do with how he's played so far. It's just, I cannot believe that he just is going to transform into a different person than the person he's been for years. I just find that super hard to believe. So I really enjoy Miles Wood is the type of player who, what he does when he's not scoring, I really like. He drives the net. His speed is exceptional. He's a big body. He's fast. Like, that's a guy that I don't need him to score to feel like he can contribute. For Galchenyuk, if the points dry up, if his minutes and opportunity dry up, he doesn't give you anything else. This is a team with lots of offense. So for me, I would like someone who would make me feel comfortable that if he's not going to score, can do something else for the team.
Well, I think just now, what's the price? What's the price? If we're going to go in and get a Taylor Hall and it's going to cost you a Robertson or a prospect, I don't think so. If it's going to cost you a pick, yeah, you go out and make the deal. But to mortgage some of this future now to get a guy, you know, if Taylor Hall, if he's not putting up points, what is he doing this year? Not that much, right? So I think unless you get a known commodity, there's a Joel Ward out there or a 2018 Devontae Smith-Pelly, yeah, you go out and make that deal and you sacrifice some of the future. But who are you going to bring in now that's going to really go out and do what Coleman did or Goudreau did for the Tampa Bay Lightning? I don't think really those guys that are out there are battle-tested and ready to go. So I wouldn't be mortgaging any of the future, especially with Galchenyuk. He's bringing speed. He's bringing tenacity. He's getting in, controlling the puck. So I don't do anything unless it's the price is cheap. The price is right, as Bob Barker says.
Well, and it does seem as if the price is cheap. And for some teams, the price is right. When you look at the Eric Staal deal, like a third and a fifth, and Buffalo picks up half the contract. Wow. Palmieri and Zajac and they're chewing on contract, and you know, they send a couple of players in Jobst and Greer, and it's a first round pick and a conditional fourth. Like, prices, I don't know if it's just me, prices seem low right now. Maybe this all changes by Monday, but I look at the two big deals that we've seen so far, last night's New Jersey Islanders one and the previous Buffalo-Montreal one, and I say prices aren't that expensive this year.
Yeah. Am I off base? No, that's the big thing with trade deadline day. God, every GM thinks they're, like, I don't know, Nostradamus or someone who says profundities on the regular. But it's just like, oh, people make mistakes on deadline day. Deadline day is a day mistakes are made. It's like, yeah, we get it. I know. But also, it's a time right now where this is a rare year. You could actually get some value. And I understand it's a short amount of games till playoffs. But if you really think you can have a playoff push, as you said, prices are cheap. Taylor Hall, you might get Taylor Hall for a first-round pick, a late first-round pick, maybe not even a first-round pick. You know, at the end of the day, how many people are bidding on that guy right now? It can't be many teams. So certainly, prices are cheap. This might be the year to go shopping.
But we look at now with the trade bait list, the Sportsnet trade bait list, and the number eight top trade bait is Toronto's top prospect. I don't see a second rounder or a third rounder. So when Toronto's picking up the phone calling some of these teams, they're saying, well, we want some of those guys on the farm. They're not talking pick numbers. They're talking prospects.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to the trade here in a couple of seconds, but back to the Maple Leaf game quickly. We should mention Austin Matthews, probably the best player on the ice the entire three periods. One goal, one assist. The goal, you know, early 54, 55 seconds into the game, you know, takes Shea Weber to school behind the net and wraps it around Jake Allen. Jeez, I don't know how much more we can talk about Austin Matthews, Justin Bourne, but here we go. Austin Matthews, last night, your thoughts?
It's just so dominant. It's really a delight to watch. I saw someone tweet today that it was like, it's too bad that Connor McDavid wins, is in the league, or this is like his Hart Trophy season. He just, all over the ice, the defensive end, back-checking, setting guys up, creating offense, and then obviously just scoring at a superhuman rate. He's exceptional to watch. He's really slick. I can tell that he put in that work in the offseason to get lighter. He still has jump in his step at the end of 45-second shifts, and that play he makes on the Hyman goal is a testament to that, because he has two chances in the offensive zone, almost scores, working to get the puck back, has to go all the way back behind his own net, and then he beats a guy below the goal line and jumps up on another 200-foot rush. So really, really like where his game's at. His conditioning is great, and it looks like his wrist is not bothering him anymore.
Yeah, when he made that play on the Hyman goal too, I think in years past he would just come in and do the old Cheryl swoops and go for a quick skate and hope the puck gets out. But that just shows the evolution of him, and that what makes him a great two-way player in the game. And he's not a guy that's going to come in and throw big body checks, but he's one of the best at picking guys' pockets, lifting sticks, and having proper angles there too. So I love the fact that it's not just one and done plays. He's making great defensive plays, and he's turning the puck over, being a good transition center. So he's one of the top guys in the league for that, going from defense to offense. And again, like Justin mentioned, his conditioning looks like it's phenomenal.
Yeah,
right now.
Stewie, sticking with you on the Montreal side of things, Corey Perry with two goals, and both of them in very Corey Perry fashion, specifically the one that pulled the Montreal Canadiens within one, the second of the 3-2. 3-2 goals for the Toronto Maple Leafs. His second goal of the night. Your thoughts on Corey Perry last night?
We're just going to have a segment, and we're just going to go through the list of guys and just call
old
him
guys.
Guy or not a guy. But he is a guy. And that's where, you know, it baffles me that this guy went to the 11th hour sitting, you know, in purgatory, not having a deal and signing in and ending up on the taxi squad. This is a guy every single team needs. A guy when the game gets gritty and it's time to roll up your sleeves and get to the net and play some dirty hockey. He is the perfect type of player. And again, not the fastest guy, but in tight, one of the best hands the National Hockey League on his first goal, just waiting out Jack Campbell and just sliding it five-hole here. But the goals that he scored, especially at the end of the game there, those are the games that put you over the top in series. Those are the games that are scored in triple overtime, those gritty goals. And not the strongest guy, not the biggest, but he knows his proper angles, but he just has that willingness to get into the net. So when we're talking about teams picking up guys at the deadline here, you need guys. You need guys like Corey Perry. And I'm not surprised by his early success so far with the Montreal Canadiens.
He went through waivers too, Stu. Like, anyone could have had him. Who wants him?
The 700 Club. That's the new thing. It's called the 700 Club. Guys making 700. He's the leader of the 700 Club. Next, and Spez is a close second.
You don't want to be in that club if you're in the NHL.
No. Do not want to be on the league minimum
club. And he used to be in the 425 Club. Back then, when the signing bonuses were big, he came off his last year. He was making $425,000. That was his QO with the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Shows how times have changed.
I think I made 700 a week in the coast at one point. Is that the 700 club? I was still underachieving my value.
You got free housing, though. You got free housing, though. Come on.
That's true. I did.
You see these prices?
they call it the cheese toast for a reason, Justin, as we all know. Okay, let's get to the deal from last night. So the Islanders and the New Jersey Devils pull off a deal. Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac go from the New Jersey Devils to the New York Islanders. A couple of younger players, A.J. Greer, Mason Jobst, along with a first-round pick and a fourth, go to the New Jersey Devils in this one. Of particular note, to make the money work, New Jersey picks up half the contract of Palmieri and half the contract of Travis Zajac. So I look at this deal, and essentially the key to it from New Jersey is the first-round pick. Like, we all know what the Islanders are getting, and we all know what sort of designs the Islanders have, and Andersley is injured, and Lou Lamoriello was all in on the Stanley Cup with this team. That might be the team that comes out of that division. They are good. Make no mistake about it. They are good. Thank you very much. So essentially, I look at it, and I say, you're picking up over $5 million of contract, surrendering Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac in exchange for a first-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the end of the day for New Jersey, though, you got a first-round draft pick. You know, you're going to give up Palmieri at some point. You probably don't consider Zajac that much of an asset to have given up. And you end up with a first-rounder in a year that no one really knows who's good because no one's played. So if you're picking 25th overall or whatever, you might be able to steal a player at that spot. I like what New Jersey did here. The conditional fourth isn't worth all that much, but the first-round pick is the big ticket there, and I think they'd be pretty content to have moved early and been able to put that in their pocket with days to go before the deadline.
What do you think, Stewie?
Yeah, I like the Zajac pickup. There's guys that get you there, and there's guys that get you through, and I think Zajac's one of those guys. And I played against him for a long time when he was in New Jersey. And back then when we played, he was probably a 60-point guy, 25 goals. But he's a reliable. I think he's going to slide into the third center role there. And he's a guy that wins faceoffs. He's a pretty good faceoff guy. He's big. He's 6'2". He can make plays, but he's just a solid, prototypical third-line player right now, you know, in the National Hockey League. And you're looking at the numbers, not that fancy, you know, 7 goals in 33 games, but he's one of those guys. I would not be surprised now if he helps put the Islanders over the top. And the Islanders right now in that division, they have to be the favorites right now just based on these two moves that they made. You know, reliable center in Zajac and Palmieri, who can put the puck in the net as well.
Zajac gave me, he does. Sorry, Jeff. Zajac makes me feel old because he was a skinny teenager on the Salmon Arm Silverbacks when I was with the Vipers. One of our defensemen put him through the glass. It was like, who is this little kid who is not fit to be out here? You know, just getting destroyed.
What was the logo there? Was that a half gorilla, half fish? What was that?
They committed. A team. They committed to the silverback. So
how about the salmon arm fish? Like, what are we doing here? Trying to reinvent the wheel.
Just got a fish with a flexing bicep like Trogdor and a silverback gorilla. It was a mess of a logo.
Couple of things. Lou Lamoriello loves bringing back his old players. We see that each and every year here. And, you know, to the previous point, Stewie, does this make the Islanders a front runner in that division? Like, is this enough for you to say this right now in what may be the most competitive division in all of hockey? And by the way, Islanders are playing the Flyers tonight. Both Travis Zajac and Kyle Palmieri. Palmieri, yes, did indeed have to shave his beard. So he is clean shaven for tonight's matchup against the Philadelphia Flyers. Both those players in the lineup. Is this enough for everyone to look at and say, clearly now, the Islanders are the best in the division?
I have to say yes, and this is just dating back to what they how they played in the bubble. And I think among all the teams, especially in the division, but in the whole entire hockey league, Barry Trotz has his team sticking to this system to a T. And you're looking at their goaltending and Sorokin and Varlamov. Both guys are mid, 900 save percentage. They're playing the game the right way. They are built for the playoffs. Big, heavy hockey. And the additions of these two players that they just added from the New Jersey Devils, that has to make them the favorite. So it's going to be interesting to see now, what teams like Washington and Pittsburgh do now at the deadline, because the Islanders, with these moves, they have to be the favorite right now in that mass mutual East Division, as they say.
Yeah, I think so too. It's such a shame about Lee, but I admire that they've gone all in here with this trade. I also really like that the guys they got fit what they are to me. Like, they are guys that are veteran guys. They're not, maybe they'll turn into something guys. They're like, it's about this season and guys who want to get through. I love these pickups. This Islanders team is just going to be so tough to put away. Like, I just don't know that they're going to blow anyone out of the water, but I just can't see any team beating them four times right now in a series, even with all those good teams in the East.
So there you have it. So the Islanders deal, Palmieri and Zajac will be in the lineup tonight as the Islanders face off against the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sam Cosentino, lead draft analyst on Sportsnet, our prospect experts. A couple of things. We're going to talk about a kid who plays with the Regina Pats, who at 15 years of age might already be the best player in the Western Hockey League. Also, Sam's draft rankings for April are out at sportsnet.ca. He'll expand on those. Players' names you need to know starting now. Next with Sam Cosentino as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Sam Cosentino standing by. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Chicago Blackhawks and Florida Panthers getting together on a deal today to Chicago. Brett Connolly and defenseman Riley Stillman, along with a seventh round pick and Henrik Bjorkstrom. More on him in a couple of moments. Going to the Florida Panthers, Lucas Walmark and Lucas Carlson. I want to start there with Sam Cosentino because there's one name that jumps out, and that's Henrik Bjorkstrom here. Sam Cosentino joins us. We'll talk about Sam's April prospects list, his draft list, and a lot of Michigan in this thing. We should also talk about the phenom playing for the Regina Pats. But Sam, good afternoon. Before we get into prospects and everything, I can remember being at the draft there with you in Buffalo, and Henrik Bjorkstrom gets drafted by the Florida Panthers when everybody thought they were the ones that were hot and heavy for Alex DeBrincat, and that was going to be the fit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I know he looked good at Denver, hasn't really worked out yet. How much of a wild card here is Henrik Bjorkstrom in this trade to Chicago?
Well, it's amazing sometimes when you go back and you look at that and how much of a surprise pick that was at the time, and obviously not under this general manager with Bill Zito. But yep. Then you get into the situation where you get into NHL games 2 and 3 years, you get a number of games in one of those seasons, and the player sitting there saying, hey, I'm a first-round pick. I should be given all that opportunity to go and play. And when it comes in fits and spurts, it becomes difficult to adjust. And the team's saying, well, hey, you're a first-round pick. You should be performing better than that, and we shouldn't have to take you out of the lineup. So I look at Borgstrom as being that guy that the change of scenery is probably a likely scenario that maybe either says, all right, you're coming here with a clean slate. You're going to be given opportunity. Take the ball and run with it. And another guy that I think about as we move towards the trade deadline, who I think is of that very same ilk, would be Logan Brown of the Ottawa Senators, who has got games in each of the last 3 years, but never really able to sustain that spot in the lineup. So he'll be an interesting one to look at. But you look at these first-round guys, there's always people that think about, hey, even if they didn't have them in the first, probably somewhere early in the second, that say, I've watched them enough that there is something there. Let's just take a chance on the guy, and we'll see how it plays out.
Sam Cosentino with us. Before we get to your list, I want to spend a little bit of time here before I hand this over to Stewie and then Justin to talk about a phenomenal 15-year-old player with the Regina Pats, Connor Bedard, who we've seen highlights and clips all over Twitter and Instagram and whatever social media platform you have, highlight shows, Sportsnet, like all of it. A, how good is this guy? And has he already distinguished himself at 15 years of age as one of the best players in the Western League?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. I think when you look at a guy who's been going back and forth with Dylan Gunther for the scoring lead, you have to be really excited. I mean, the Western Hockey League typically is not a place for 15-year-olds, period. They get their AP games in when their teams are out of the playoffs, but obviously this year it provided a much different circumstance. So they are getting a lot of opportunity. And I look at the 04s and the 05s that are in the Western Hockey League, and you're going to be really impressed here in the next two drafts by what they have to offer. But when it comes to Bedard, and you look at Hockey Canada, more players available to them for this year's under-18s than they've ever had before, because usually CHL teams are in the playoffs. So now he gets picked to play in that team. That tells me everything about what the Hockey Canada people are thinking about him. And so now I think he's fantastic. Now, we have to temper some of that enthusiasm just a little bit, because he's in a bubble situation. He doesn't have any of that long Western Hockey League travel that typically is experienced by players.
True.
He's getting the same sort of competition every night because there's only six other teams in that bubble. And so you're somewhat in a protected environment. And when I look at the league in general, they tend to play younger players. So the league is being played younger than it typically is. And so that also helps out. Those are three mitigating factors, but you can't take away from what he's done, including that four-point effort a couple of nights ago.
Going over the list, I've only seen one player from the OHL in the top 10, and I think four in the whole entire first round now. So do you think the lack of playing time this year is really going to affect the draft when it comes to players from the OHL? And could we see some guys actually fall out of the draft due to the lack of play?
Big time, Stu. It's really, really problematic. Now, some of the higher-end guys, the Brant Clarks, the Pinellis, the guys that are projected in the first round, Mason McTavish, they've had the opportunity to at least get a bit of time in overseas. But it's such a wonky situation to try and make a determination on what a player looks like, whether it's in a men's league, a second or third division, you know, in a country that's not typically known for its higher-end leagues. So it becomes challenging. Now, the under-18 is going to provide some of these guys a real good concentrated opportunity to get their name back out in front of scouts. But, Stu, you've watched a lot of guys either in your coaching career now in minor hockey or even back when you played, that sometimes it takes them a year or two. When you take that year away, especially in a draft year, and you've taken away essentially, you know, a couple of months from the year before, you're talking about losing basically a full year and a bit of developmental time, which is so key at that age. So there is no question that's going to have a significant impact on OHL players. I think your high-end guys, the guys that we're seeing projected to go in the first round, will still end up there, but maybe not as high as they might have been had they been able to play some semblance of a season.
Sammy, one of the things I've heard people say is, you know, maybe this is the year you don't care about giving up a top pick or a top draft pick, your first rounder, second rounder, because it's so hard to evaluate anyway. To me, that makes those picks more valuable because you have a better chance of getting someone farther down who maybe was worth more than where you get them. Do you think that a first-round pick, you know, late first-rounder or something, has more or less value this season given the weirdness in drafting and scouting?
My opinion is less value, Justin, and that's going to be a hugely debatable thing. And I know I've heard Jeff talk about having more darts to throw at the dartboard, and that theory has taken a little bit of a run. But my opinion is there's simply less certainty all the way around. And why is there less certainty? Because it just goes to prove, especially with all the teams that I've talked to, how important it is to get live and in-person viewings. You're watching a guy in a warm-up. You're watching a guy with his reaction to his teammates. You're watching how he responds to his coach. You're looking at body language, all things that are important in what you project that player to be down the road. You don't get that in video. You know that. You're a video guy. You just don't get that. And then you look at, let's say if we were able to add third assists as a stat. Well, oftentimes a play that develops that happens somewhere in the D zone that might not necessarily be in the frame of what your video offers, that player is responsible for the play. He would be given a third assist on that play if it were available to him, but you don't see that in video. What you see is, oh, okay, here's how this is one tic-tac pass back door. That's how it happened. Well, how did they get into the zone? How did they break out of their own zone? What play happened two plays before the two assists that are given? You don't see a lot of that in video. So I think that there is less value to those first-round picks this year because there's less certainty on the type of player you're going to get. Having said that, I'd have no issue taking anyone in the top 10 that I currently have listed there from yesterday's list.
Is there anyone not from Michigan? We're with Sam Costantino. Anyone not from Michigan in your top 10, Sam? That's a, it's a run of the table for the by the Wolverines here.
Yeah, it sure is. So you have the three players. You have Owen Power, Matty Beniers, and Kent Johnson. And then you also have Luke Hughes, who's committed to go there. And then you look at the U.S. Under-18 program with a guy like Chaz Lucius, Sasha Pastajaba with 3 points in that BioSteel All-American game last night. So the state of Michigan doing a really good job. Of course, that's the home of where you know USA's Under-18 and Under-17 developmental program is based. But boy, Mel Pearson has got a wealth of riches when you talk about Thomas Bortolo, you know, Brisson from last year, Brendan Brisson, those three freshmen that were all outstanding this year. It's going to be fun to watch the University of Michigan if everyone sticks around here in the next couple of years.
So you mentioned most of the scouting or all of the scouting being done by video now. So I'm sure some players tend to be overhyped. So with Owen Power coming in next year, do you see him being, do you agree with the comparisons to Victor Hedman because of the size?
Whoa.
Well, it's pretty heady comparison. And what I, you know, and last night I compared it a little bit to like Ty Myers, Daniel Chera, Victor Hedman, all tall defensemen who've all played for a long time. And so sometimes you have to take a little bit of away from the point production and look at a guy who's going to play big minutes for a long time for your club and try and balance those things out. But when I look at Owen Power, he just plays the game so easily. And I remember when Victor Hedman came into the league, no one really feared him. He wasn't an overly aggressive guy. He wasn't, he wasn't the meanest guy. That part of his game developed once he came to the National Hockey League. And now everyone will tell you this guy's the most miserable guy to play against. Cross-checking the back, sticking the back of the legs, overpowering you in front of the net, board battles, all those sorts of things developed because he came into the league as such a young player. And I see Owen Power following that developmental path. And so I wouldn't necessarily say that he's on the same the same trajectory as where Hedman is. I mean, Hedman's, top three in the league right now in defenseman, debatable top five. But I do think Owen Power, because of his size, because of his skating ability, because of his puck skills, all things that Hedman possessed when he came into the league, I think there's some similarities there for sure.
Sammy, do you think there's anyone that the lack of hockey and the lack of option, any of these junior kids, that it actually helped them? I ask this because I think of Mason Marchment when I was at the Toronto Marlies. He came there as a talented kid, but what they thought he needed was to get bigger. They thought he needed muscle mass and strength and skating help, and they put him through a lot of weight training and skills drills, and don't look now, but he's in the NHL. Is there anyone who would be best served by having some time away from the rink and bulking up and doing those sort of things?
Well, it's funny you say that because sometimes you get the impression and you have a book on what the players are doing in their 17-year-old season. You look at the under-17s and you're thinking, all right, this guy's on a great trajectory here to move forward. But then you go and you come back and in this draft year, he's just not quite the same guy. And you're trying to figure out, well, why hasn't he progressed? What happened here? So there isn't a name that comes to mind right off the top of my head where you'd say, he's probably better off not playing because we have the great memories of what he was like as a 17-year-old. But there's no doubt there'll be players that definitely will fit that bill. For me right now, to be perfectly honest with you, that player doesn't come top of mind to me.
Sam, I want to close on a couple of things here. I want to ask you about the Ontario Hockey League, of course, as we all know, not playing despite the fact that the Western League and the Quebec Major Junior League are. But I want to ask you, in your list, and you can find it at sportsnet.ca, projected Sam Cosentino's first-round draft list. I look at it, and my favorite player that I look at, or maybe it's just because I've seen him so much going back to that, playing on that Don Mills team with Shane Wright and Brennan Othman, is Brant Clark, who was a defenseman for the Barry Colts. If I look at it, I say, that's my favorite player to watch of this draft class. Do you have one? Do you have a player that you look at and you go, yeah, I just love watching this guy play?
I think Kent Johnson would be that guy for me. He's just so dynamic offensively. He has so much confidence with the puck. He's not afraid to make any play, be it through the pass, the lacrosse style goal, whatever the case may be. And he's not afraid to attack defenders. He can draw wide. He can cut to the middle of the ice. Stu, I heard you talking a little bit about Galchenyuk before, going to the middle of the ice, not being afraid to go to the back end, that sort of thing. Well, Kent Johnson has all of that in his game right now. Are they translatable skills? Yeah, you'd project them to be here in a couple of years. But just because of how dynamic he is offensively, that when he gets the puck, there's so much uncertainty about what he's going to do with it. And that, mm-hmm. for me, that kind of suspense really draws you out of your seat.
Okay, last question here. The Ontario Hockey League not playing. I've had a weird, month, maybe 2 months, trying to figure out what's happening between the Ontario Hockey League and the province of Ontario. And at times, it seemed as if they were close to having agreements. I've been told as most recently as last week that there was some type of arrangement between the two, and just waiting for the right time for an announcement and try to get in 24 games over 2 months, and playoffs are a question mark, and, you know, five-team bubbles, et cetera. We've all kinds of rumors. And here we are in the provinces in lockdown, and I don't know politically how either side could even mention publicly the idea of a return, let alone a provincially subsidized return to play.
Mm-hmm.
What do you hear? What do you know about the OHL right now?
Well, and this is it, Jeff, but here's the thing. When you look at Alberta, when you look at Saskatchewan, when you look at Quebec, all of those teams have had substantial government funding. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to afford to do what they're doing. And so Ontario was in a situation where they did get some help when it comes to the scholarship program. I think that was a good look. And I think under that guise, it looked to be appropriate. But the fact of the matter is, these teams can't – I don't think they can afford to play in any sort of bubble situation, which would be the only thing acceptable right now, without further government support. And that one's a tough one, especially now how things have progressed with this third wave. I think if they were able to get started a lot earlier and they had settled into their bubbles and maybe played in fits and starts like the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, we might have been talking about, 15, 20 games already in the books. And now that seems, as each day passes, like it's not likely to happen. And it's pretty tough to go to the province to say, hey, support 20 or 17 Ontario-based Ontario Hockey League teams when, people are fighting for their lives and our ICUs are overcrowded and so on and so forth. So I'm afraid that the Ontario Hockey League may have missed its window. And so it's going to be really challenging here moving forward for sure.
Yeah, I was told the price tag for the OHL to pull it off would be a $1 million subsidy per team of all the Ontario-based teams, not the U.S.-based teams, to make this thing happen. Doesn't feel to me like that's going to happen. We shall see. Sam, always amazing information. Thanks so much for stopping by. Sam's list, by the way, have a look at it. Start to get to know these names. You're going to see them in the NHL sooner than later. And specifically, all the names of the Michigan Wolverines players from Owen Power all the way down. And Luke Quinn is another one who, as Sam mentions, is a commit. Have a look at this list at sportsnet.ca. Sam, always full value. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Take care.
There he is, the great Sam Cosentino. No one breaks it down like Sammy does. I talk to a lot of people around junior hockey. I'm sure you guys do as well. And specifically, players' families. I can't tell you how many parents have either DM'd or texted, say, hey, what's going on? My kid just got pulled back from Europe. We hear there's a season that's going to go. What's happening? My kid's just doing privates and that's it. And just small group training. What's happening with the OHL? As Sam mentions, every day that goes by right now, it looks less and less like this league is going to play. And I don't know what that means for the future of this league either. I don't know how much. We know the damage that's been done financially to all the teams. We know the damage that's been done by way of player development for all these players. But I don't know what this means at every rung of the ladder for the OHL. It is a very sensitive time for this junior hockey league. We'll hit a break. We'll come back. Have a look at some of the games on the go around the NHL tonight. And if you missed it earlier, Cal Palmieri and Travis Zajac will be in the Islanders lineup this evening as they face off against the Philadelphia Flyers. A peek at the schedule for later on tonight on Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. We're back in a moment on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, welcome back to the program. Merrick alongside Stewart and Bourne. Amongst the games this evening in the NHL, Winnipeg Jets are facing off against the Montreal Canadiens. Winnipeg without Blake Wheeler did not make the trip. They are treating it as if it is a concussion, although I don't believe he has been officially diagnosed as having one. Also, the Oilers face off against the Ottawa Senators. I want to park a little bit of time here to talk about one goal specifically. And Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl last night were outstanding. They were highlight machines, and one really stuck with me. the second Draisaitl goal, the one where he's standing below the goal line and on a one-timer buries it. Nice pass by McDavid, even better shot by Leon Draisaitl. Stewie, A, would you ever think of making that shot? And B, what would your coach say if you tried to take that shot and came back to the bench?
And it was on a power play as well, too, right? Was it not on a power play?
Let me check.
Regardless, but you know, from the one angle, it literally looked like it was a squeaker, but you know, they show the view behind the net, and it literally went all mesh. So the confidence just to even consider doing that shot and not really setting up the play in the zone, that just shows what type of player Leon Draisaitl does. But if I did that and it missed the net, back up into the press box for 4 or 5 games, Stewie. Take a look. Learn the game.
It was very reminiscent of Mario Lemieux. The way Mario used to fade off into the corner and bomb one from, you know, on the ice from the goal line. Yeah. I love that shot.
The first one was a power play goal. The second was a 5-on-5. Sorry.
Yeah. No, just strictly such a confidence thing. Like, if you're confident enough that it's going to get on net, the outcomes aren't bad, right? The outcome just spit out a rebound, most likely, if it doesn't go in. So I like the idea of taking a shot there. McDavid, by the way, called him one of the top 2 goal scorers in the NHL with Ovechkin. Didn't even snuff his buddy, Austin Matthews. Loved it.
That's pretty awesome. It's the Devils and the Sabres this evening, Flyers and the Islanders, Penguins and the Rangers. Rangers bomb teams. Like, every time they win, it's like they'll put up an 8 spot. The Boston Bruins, by the way, Jeremy Swayman gets the second consecutive start in net for the Boston Bruins this evening. The Cats and the Hurricanes, Tampa and the Blue Jackets, mention the Habs and the Jets, the Oilers and the Sens, Preds, Red Wings, Stars, Hawks. That is your evening. Really quickly, Justin, which game has your attention tonight?
I'm on the Pittsburgh Penguins over the Rangers. They lost to them last time, and the Rangers just got their vaccines. They might be a little sluggish today.
Stewie, quickie.
Florida, Carolina, let's go.
All right, let's go. We're back tomorrow at noon.